Do you have the perfect family and friendship circle? I don't think any of us do. But everyone needs someone. Is there hope for complicated, difficult, or just plain dysfunctional families? Today on Storyline, we look at a not-so-typical family with Jesus as a house guest at the most painful moment. Welcome to Storyline. I'm so glad that you've joined me. Whether or not this is your first time watching Storyline, I hope that you'll feel a part of this program as we dig deep into the lives of Bible characters. We're coming to you live. Now, this means that if you want to ask a question or contribute to the program, you can do so throughout our show. It's simple, and you can do it in a variety of ways. You can call toll-free 888-9-STORYLINE, or you can use 707-200-1070 to call or text. For more instant interaction, you can find Storyline on Facebook. Storyline is all about stories, and we all like a good story. Now, the Bible contains a collection of the greatest accounts. It covers adventure, romance, war, heroes, you name it, the Bible has it. But what makes the Bible very unique is its focus. In Storyline, we focus on the special Bible people and the challenges that they face. We step into their world to study their victories and their challenges. We want to get close to these Bible characters, and in the process, we want to learn practical lessons for our lives. Now, the best part of all of this is that in these storylines, we find a God who loves us intensely and immensely, even in life's most painful moments. Now, today, I have something special for you. We're giving away a free study guide. This is filled with great info that'll make your study of Lazarus that much deeper. To receive it, just go to our website and click on the free offers tab. For one family in Bethany, that must have seemed hard to believe. They knew Jesus he had often been with them in their home. They knew him as a guest, and yet he didn't seem to be there when he was really needed. You can find the story in your Bible. If you turn to John chapter 11, you can read from verse 1 to 44. Now, come with me as we share a maybe not so happy moment, a family in deep pain. Let's rewind about 2,000 years. Lazarus was sick. This wasn't your normal cough, cold. This was serious. Lazarus was from Bethany. Now, Bethany is the city where Lazarus, his two sisters, Mary and Martha, where they lived. John tells us that this Mary was the same Mary that broke the perfume over Jesus' feet and wiped it with her hair. So these sisters knew who to turn to in a crisis. Immediately, they sent a message to Jesus. It's a lovely message. It's short, like a telegram, short and very crisp and to the point. And the message read, "Lord, the one you loved is sick." That's it. That's all they had to say. They were perfectly sure that Jesus would drop whatever he was doing and rush back to be with their family in this hour of crisis. Jesus would be there for them. They must have wondered and hoped as Lazarus quickly got weaker. Where was Jesus?
Jesus didn't come. Lazarus died. What was Jesus doing? Well, when Jesus got the message, he stayed exactly where he was for another 2 days. And then he said to his disciples, "Let's go." Now, the disciples were not over keen on leaving. One of them said, "Lord, they tried to stone you just a short while ago." Then Jesus said, "Lazarus has fallen asleep. We're going to wake him up." "Oh, good. If Lazarus is sleeping, then he'll get better soon. This is good news." Jesus had to speak very plainly and directly. "No, Lazarus is not sleeping. He's dead. But we're still going to wake him up." I don't think the disciples got the last part, but they understood the gravity of the situation. This family that was so special to Jesus was really facing probably the most difficult moment, and Jesus was going to them. This was something that they could understand. So they all set off for Bethany. The Bible tells us that when Jesus actually arrived at Bethany, he found out that Lazarus had already been dead and buried for 4 days. 4 days. 4 of the longest days. The house was crowded, full of mourners. Mary and Martha had a lot of friends, perhaps relatives, people coming together to help them mourn their terrible loss. Jesus still hadn't reached the town when news came to Martha that Jesus was approaching. The biggest question in Martha's mind must have been, "Why now, Lord? You didn't even make it to the funeral." But quietly and quickly, she gets up and heads out for the road into town. And there she meets Jesus. Lord, if you had been here, my brother wouldn't have died." I wonder what facial expression Jesus had at that moment. There must have been something there, some compassion, some look of understanding. I don't know what it is, but Martha quickly adds, "But even now, Lord, I know God hears you and gives you whatever you ask for." Martha and Jesus spend some very special, very critical moments together. It's during these moments together that Jesus lets Martha in on some profound mysteries, some wonderful things that are yet to take place. Jesus tells Martha, "I am the resurrection and the life. If you believe in me, you will never die." This is profound. This is marvelous. I wonder how much Martha gets. Now, Martha doesn't get it all. She says, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you're the Messiah, the Son of God, the one coming into the world." Jesus perhaps wants to make things even more clear, but Martha just isn't ready for it. She may not be ready for a deep theological discussion, but she knows Jesus is here. Jesus has come to us in this desperate, sad moment in our lives. And for Martha, that's enough to hang on to. She turns and goes quickly back home. This kind of news has to be shared with someone who really needs to hear it, Mary. Mary really needs to know that Jesus is here, that Jesus is with them in their sorrow, in their difficulty. So Martha comes in discreetly, taps on Mary's shoulder and says, "Jesus is here." Immediately, Mary gets up, and she gets up so quickly that those around think that She must be on her way to the cemetery to mourn. When Mary meets Jesus, she asks the same question. And I can hear this question. It must have been that loaded question. I'm not sure if she was angry or just hurt, but she blurts it all out to Jesus. Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. And then Mary just starts crying. It's the shortest verse in the Bible, Jesus' reaction to Mary, but perhaps one of the most profound verses. John tells us, and Jesus wept. When Jesus saw Mary's pain, when Jesus looked and saw the crowd of friends and relatives behind weeping, Jesus wept. Jesus knew exactly what was going to happen. He tried to tell Martha what was going to happen. He knew that this would not be the end. And yet, Jesus wept. Jesus understood. He identified. He felt their pain. He was with them. And now it was time for action. Where have you laid him? Jesus asks. Come, Lord, we'll show you. The whole crowd sets off for Lazarus's tomb. This tomb is similar to the tomb that Jesus will be using in just a very short time. It's also a cave blocked by a big stone. As they arrived at the tomb, once again, people began to cry. There they were, back reliving the last 4 days. And Jesus cries with them. The Bible tells us that he was greatly troubled. This wasn't just a sniffle. This was Jesus crying from a heart full of pain. Jesus crying for and with the people that he was identifying himself with. Jesus, looking at probably some strong young men, maybe even his disciples nearby, says, "Move the stone." Martha, the practical Martha, immediately springs into action. "Lord, it's been 4 days. The smell, it's going to be overpowering." There's that reassurance in Jesus' eyes as he looks at Martha. "Martha, didn't I tell you that if you believed, you would see God's power in action?" The stone gets rolled away. People, I'm sure, are clutching at the edge of their robes, grabbing handkerchiefs to put over their noses. The smell must have already been coming out. And now Jesus is calmly serene. He knows what is about to happen. He looks up and begins to pray. It's a short prayer and way out of our league. Jesus speaks to his Father as he knows his Father. There's this intimacy. There's this unity. Jesus says, "Thank you for hearing me. I know you always hear me. You always do. But thank you for hearing me and showing all of these here, all of these people here that you've sent me." And then, turning to the gaping black mouth of the cave, Jesus says, "Lazarus, come out." Eyes that have been riveted on Jesus all turn in unison towards that black opening. What would happen? What would happen? A rustle, and suddenly Lazarus stands at the mouth of the cave. No one moves. You can hear a pin drop. Perhaps one or two gasps. Jesus smiles. Unwrap him. Let him go. Jesus has given a foretaste of what he wants to do to all our broken families.
Do you remember your first love? I think the vast majority of us have had a heartbreak or watched a special relationship go sour. And even if we can laugh now, we remember the pain. The very worst pain is to have someone you love torn away by death. It seems so final. The family, the relationship, it's broken. Things can never be the same. And it's not just 21st century people that feel this way. People have always been hoping to find hope when faced with death. Sometimes people looked in the strangest of places for resurrection hope. We have Dr. Benjamin Baker with us, and he's going to participate in our hands-on segment. Now, Benjamin has brought along a big egg, peanuts, an Egyptian scarab beetle. Now, if you want to know the connection between all these things and more, stay right with us. We'll be back in a minute. Benjamin Baker is no stranger to Storyline. I'm sure you'll recognize him. And we have him back again. A historian to take us on a guided tour back in time is always a treat. Now, last time, I think we were talking about time and clocks on Hezekiah's story. So it's really good to have you back with us. Welcome to Storyline.
Nice to be back. This is my favorite show on TV.
You had to say that because you were here. Well, it is great to have you anyway.
Thank you.
Now, you've brought very exciting things along. Where can we begin? They seem kind of disconnected. Wait, I think here is a connection. What is this?
That's an Egyptian tomb.
Egypt.
Yes.
I think pharaohs, kings, probably the most common one that our viewers will also recognize is King Tut.
King Tut.
Yeah. Right. And he was probably the biggest name in Egyptian history.
Right. It's the largest discovery.
Mm-hmm. Was he really the most important king?
No. In fact, he was very obscure.
Very obscure.
He's not included in many of the extant documents or hieroglyphics.
But he had great funeral garb.
Definitely.
Now, I've noticed that in some of his things, he has this. What is this?
That is a scarab beetle.
Okay.
As you can see, it's very intricately carved because the beetle in Egyptian culture was considered sacrosanct. It was considered sacred.
Okay. Now, this is actually a dung beetle, right?
Yes.
The little beetle that uses its nose to push a ball of dung. How could that land as a sacred object?
Well, that's a very good question. I think these days beetles to us are nuisances, but to the ancient Egyptians, they saw this scarab beetle. Uh-huh. They saw a beetle, and it formed a ball out of the dung, uh-huh. And the male would push it into a hole, mm-hmm. And then the female beetle would come and lay her eggs in the dung.
Okay.
The eggs would hatch, and they would very minute.
Yes.
And they would eat the dung, uh-huh. And then they would emerge out of the hole. And so the Egyptians saw them as sort of self-perpetuating, out of nothing.
Buried and then wham, they're back again.
Yes. And so they were signs, they were icons, uh-huh. Of self-regeneration, renewal, and self-perpetuation.
And a hope.
Yes.
That there'll be something coming back at some point.
Right.
From a dung beetle. Okay. Well, let's move away from dung beetles and Egypt. Ooh, they look pretty.
Butterflies.
Butterflies.
Yes. Now, and I think pretty much every culture has tremendous respect and awe and wonder.
Well, I like butterflies.
For butterflies. We can go from ancient Mexico, China, Egypt. Every culture has given special prominence to butterflies because, as you know, the cocoon process.
Right.
How they come out of the cocoon, they represent regeneration.
Well, it's life. Also, it seems to be like a coffin or something that the little thing is in there, and for all intents and purposes, it looks dead. And then suddenly you have something much more glorious come out than what went in originally.
This gorgeous creature comes out full of life, moving rapidly and wings fluttering. And every culture saw great meaning and significance in the life of the butterfly,
the
odyssey of the butterfly.
Yes. And they're pretty to look at
as
they flash along on beautiful wings.
Definitely.
Well, this we have here, a great big egg. I guess I can see a connection between egg and cocoon over here. What kind of egg is this?
Well, this is an ostrich egg.
Uh-huh.
And as you can see, this is roughly the size of 24 chicken eggs.
Whoo.
And so
could
this
make quite
be
the omelet, huh?
It will be a massive omelet.
I don't want to know about the cholesterol levels there.
True, true, the cholesterol and the calories. But an egg, of course, represents life and hatching and birth.
I think in most Western cultures, I mean, with Easter eggs and all that kind of thing, it's kind of somehow
come out. An egg is a symbol of resurrection for us in Easter. And there was a monk named Bede in the 8th century who first, he tried to trace the origins of Easter.
Uh-huh.
And he came up with the Anglo-Saxon goddess of fertility.
Okay.
Her name was Eostre.
Oh, well, that sounds a bit like Easter, doesn't it?
He said, yes, he said that's where it came from.
Okay.
But we don't know exactly where Easter, where the egg culture originated from.
But it definitely is way back in different pagan religions.
Definitely, definitely.
Where you have something hatching out of an egg.
Yes.
You've got to be pretty tough to get out of this egg. That's
I understand that you can stand on it.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's really tough.
Yes.
Well, we have something here as well. This is a whole lot more fragile. I don't think we can stand on these.
And these are, of course...
I think these are from Korea.
Yes, it's Buddhist art.
Okay.
And the Buddhists have a history of resurrection mythology, resurrection legends.
Mm-hmm.
There was a man named Bodhidharma.
Okay.
And he was a monk, and in fact, he trained Shaolin monks. Mm-hmm. And he died, and one day, purportedly, a politician saw him walking around. And he said, that's Bodhidharma. That has to be him because he had, you know, signature gestures and a way of walking. And so they went and they investigated his grave and he was gone. He wasn't in his grave.
Now, how did the bird come into all of that?
Well, the bird also represents life and movement and flight.
Okay.
And so all of this represents resurrection.
Well, that sure would be, I think, would be nice to think of. Freedom, flight, maybe returning like a bird.
Definitely.
Over here. Now, there's one more thing we've got to look at, and it just doesn't fit in with eggs and butterflies and birds. Peanuts.
Peanut. In the pre-Incan society, Peru, Brazil, peanuts were believed to first be harvested in that region.
And what did peanuts have to do with resurrection?
They represented life. And rebirth, you know, you break open the shell, and this almost resembles a coffin.
Well, at least I guess that's the way they would also embalm people in these big bundles.
Similar to a cocoon, almost, and so you break it. And so the pre-Incans, the indigenous people of the Americas, would actually place these in the tombs, in the mounds.
Mm-hmm.
For burial, and they'd often reproduce them with gold. They make them gold and double the size and silver, and so they would wear chains and all.
Well, this is fascinating, and right down to peanuts. Well, Benjamin, we could talk a whole lot more.
We could.
Yeah, there's a lot more cultures to explore, but we've got to go. But it's really been so great to have you join us over
here.
And I really found this all intriguing with all these symbols. Well, it's nice that Jesus doesn't just leave us with a symbol. In today's story of Lazarus, Jesus actually gave us a taste of the real thing. After the break, we'll be back with guests that'll help us dig into Lazarus' story. So stay with us. We'll be right back. Sometimes can get really lonely, but not on Storyline. We have all sorts of tools to help us connect. You can call us, text us, find Storyline on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, download the app, or subscribe to the HD podcast. If Storyline has impacted you in some special way, or if you have a Bible story that you'd like us to tackle, please let us know. I'd love to hear from you. We also have a terrific study guide for you. If you think that we're exploring the story tonight, just wait until you see what's inside this study guide. To receive it, just go to our website and click on the free offers tab. Family and friends are the best antidote to loneliness. And I'm so glad to not have to be alone on Storyline. I have a wonderful group of friends joining me as we explore the heartbreak and the healing in Lazarus's family. We have a couple with us. We have Dr. Gaspar Colon and his wife, Dr. May Ellen Colon. Dr. Gaspar Colon is the Dean of the School of Arts and Social Sciences at Washington Adventist University. And Dr. May Ellen is the Assistant Director of Sabbath School and Personal Ministries for the General Conference. They told me, more importantly, their favorite title is grandparents, which, of course, couldn't be more in line with today's subject. So it's a real pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Glad to be here.
Thanks for joining us. And then, of course, we have two other gentlemen with us.
Yes, don't forget them.
And I'm sure they both look very familiar to our viewers. We have the Cross Connection team with us. Pastor Oleg Kostyuk and Sergio Gonzalez, they are, of course, those familiar faces. But just in case you don't recognize them, remember, you can watch them on Tuesdays live. So, welcome to Storyline, both
of you. Here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is a great story that we're exploring today, a very hopeful story. For our viewers, you can have a look in John 11. We're looking in John 11 today. Now, our story begins with the resurrection, really, the getting sick and the resurrection of Lazarus. But actually, before, there's a family. We have Lazarus, we have Martha, we have Mary. Now, this family, they don't seem to be a conventional family, or at least not a traditional family. What do we know about this family?
Well, usually there's a mother and a father and maybe a kid or two, but we somehow don't have that here. It's all kids.
They're all kids. No parents, all kids.
Young adults.
Yeah. Young adults. Grown kids.
Yeah, yes. which does seem a little strange over here. Mm-hmm. Now, do they all get along marvelously?
There is one story, one beautiful story that is recorded not in our passage, but is recorded in Luke chapter 10, verses 38 and 39 and even 40.
Yeah.
And that is this beautiful story that probably you're familiar with. Let me read just verse 38 and 39.
Yes.
Now it happened as they went that he, that Jesus, entered a certain village, and a certain woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. And she had a sister called Mary, who also sat at Jesus' feet and heard his word. So this is something that we know about that family. Martha was a lady who was willing to work, and Mary was sitting by the feet of Jesus.
Mm. Now that on its own is a little bit rare for the culture, isn't it?
It is.
And they have problems with each other, with their personalities, with the emphasis that one has on getting everything right and getting everything ready for the guests.
Perfect housewife.
And have the place just so. And her sister, who doesn't seem to be caring about that as much as Martha thinks she should. And so there's a little bit of infighting there.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sounds like our two children, right?
It sounds like a lot of homes where siblings don't get along perfectly. Mm-hmm. Do you have a brother or a sister?
Yeah, you know, I have a brother and a sister, and growing up together, you become so skilled at just really annoying each other with these, personality differences, so you definitely can relate to something like this, yeah.
Well, what I find so nice about this story is that Jesus doesn't pick the perfect family to hang out with.
That's right.
It's the real family, not the perfect family.
Yeah. And he tends to take a family in which the brother, head of household, I don't know what you would call him, he uses the Latin name, Lazarus. The Jewish name would be Eliezer.
Okay.
But we know him in the New Testament among all of these Jewish people using a Latin name.
Now, why would he do that?
Not his Jewish name, which gives me at least the pause to think that maybe this individual is part of a broader community that is not all Jewish, that he is probably in business or rubs shoulders with a lot of people from the Roman Empire, from the Latin speaking group, and keeps the name Lazarus instead of Eliezer for purposes of maybe social interaction. Mm-hmm. And so you have a family that seems to be open to a bigger world than just their little Jewish
world.
Community.
Now, this will add on well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
In fact, when we read the story in different parallel verses, it seems that it was a wealthy family. Mm-hmm. And what is beautiful in this passage, that Martha, as an older sister, she's taking a good care of her younger sister, Mary. Mm-hmm. Why? Because in that culture, it was unheard of for a woman to sit by the feet of a rabbi. So when she approaches Jesus, he says, by the way, let her go with me. Otherwise, she loses her reputation is suffering.
This is a definite family with different
family.
Agendas.
Exactly.
Looking out for each other. Okay, well, we have to touch on, it's just so strange. We jump from the family to Lazarus, he dies, and then Jesus refers to this as a sleep. Isn't this a little strange?
Yeah. Yeah, it's and the disciples completely don't get it either. And they're like, well, if he's just sleeping, then what's the problem?
He's going to get better soon.
Yeah, what are we worried about? Yeah.
Now, what do you think the idea of death as a sleep would mean for a family?
It seems like it would be minimizing the seriousness of this phenomenon. It just
this horror.
Yeah, this horror. I mean, he's just joking, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe he was trying to say, he knew the rest of the story, of course, but maybe he was trying to say, you know, this really isn't as final as you think it is.
There's something more
there's
to come.
There's a comma and something else that's coming. It's a pause, it's a sleep.
And this biblical teaching of death being asleep is a wonderful, actually, comfort for a family. Their loved one is just asleep.
Yeah.
There's not some place where they are and you're wondering if they're okay. You don't have to be worried by receiving strange or conflicting messages from the other side of the grave. It's asleep until Jesus wakes them up over here.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Over here. Now, of course, waking up, Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life. Very briefly, what does Jesus mean? I know we could talk piles on that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, Martha has just said that she believes that he will rise again at the resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
And so she believes in a literal resurrection. As a Jewish woman, as a believer in Jesus Christ, she understands that peace. And while she's been hinting that maybe Jesus can do something about this, she's holding on to that standard answer that, you know, he will be resurrected in the last day, in the resurrection. But for Jesus to say, I am the resurrection and the life, is for him to be saying to her, there's a resurrection that is available to every heart that is dying, and I'm it. And the ultimate resurrection, yes,
will take place.
Will take place, but I want you to taste it now, mm-hmm. with me, right here in front of you.
And you know, we often think of, and Martha did probably too. She took the resurrection as a doctrine.
Yes,
a doctrine. But mm-hmm. if we like Jesus was trying to say, can help everyone, including ourselves, to realize that the doctrines are really in Him. They're all about Him, and this is one example.
Absolutely. I love this. Jesus wants to bring mm-hmm. resurrection to every heart. Yes. It's not just death that kills.
Yes.
Over here. Well, we're going to go on. We're talking about Lazarus's broken family, and perhaps you've wondered whether or not it would be okay to be angry with God. Well, perhaps you've asked the question, if Jesus cares so much, why doesn't He answer my prayers immediately, especially when I'm praying for my family? After the break, we look at these questions and a whole lot more. So stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back and we're discussing a great story with a great team over here. And this story has very practical implications. In case you've just joined us, we're discussing John 11. And we've got to ask immediately the same question that Mary and Martha were asking. If Jesus cared so much for this family, why does He not answer their message? Why does He delay and come so late? Mm. Yeah, Oleg.
Yeah, it's interesting because in verse 8, 11, chapter mm-hmm. 11, verse 8, it explicitly says, the disciples said to Him, Rabbi, lately the Jews sought to stone You, and are You going there again? Mm-hmm. So, and we read in chapter 10 and also in chapter 9 and then in chapter 10, verse 30, 31, and then verse
so
39,
over.
Verse mm-hmm. 42, they constantly want to stone Jesus.
Yes.
And now here Jesus says, I'm going to go and save this one man who was...
But he's dead. Too late, at least for Mary and Martha's point of view.
But God is never late.
Even when it seems like
yes, it. Yes, because he has a real, well, it's like an airplane view. He can see the mm-hmm. whole lay of the land.
The bird's eye view.
The bird's eye view. Well, it's the God's eye view.
Exactly. Yeah.
The interesting thing that I find about God in answering our prayers and so forth is that He sees so far beyond mm-hmm. what we see. Mm-hmm. We would like to have Lazarus be healed. He is saying...
Of course, this makes a better story, yeah. but from their point
yeah.
of view.
Of course. And Jesus is thinking, what will bring glory to my Father?
Amen.
What yeah. will bring mm-hmm. glory to God? Mm-hmm. If it takes a little longer, if it is much more consequential, it will draw attention to the fact that God can do so much more than you ever wanted to have.
But in the beginning. I think that is a wonderful thought. Prayer isn't just about making things easier, more comfortable, doing the logic thing for me. Prayer should really be about what will bring God the most glory.
Amen. Mm-hmm.
If we belong to God
exactly.
over
yeah.
here. Okay. Now, of course, we're speaking about belonging to God, and Mary and Martha really love Jesus, and so does Lazarus. But the Bible doesn't explicitly say so, but both of them, when they come to Jesus, when they meet Jesus, both of them say, Lord, if You'd been here, my brother wouldn't have died. Now, of course, I can't quite hear the tone here, but I hear some upset people.
It was intense.
Yeah. They probably were.
Yeah.
Is it okay to be angry with God because we don't have this bird's eye view, and sometimes things hurt and they just don't make sense?
God doesn't make sense sometimes.
Is it okay to be angry with Him?
Well, if David in the Psalms seemed to make it seem okay.
And Habakkuk in the Hebrew Scriptures, he's angry at God because he's actually going to use those Chaldeans to punish mm-hmm. his people.
Yeah.
I mean...
Doesn't make sense.
Didn't make sense.
Being angry with God in a sense of confronting Him to find out mm-hmm. what His will is one thing. Being angry at God to discredit him or to place him in the light of one who doesn't care is totally against reading aright the character of God himself. So I would say, yes, it's all right to challenge God, to ask him of all things, as long as we're willing to listen to his answer. Mm-hmm.
So asking's okay, challenging's okay,
yeah.
But don't slam the door.
Exactly.
Yeah, and when I look at that, their reaction, anyone who's lost a loved one knows exactly that feeling of just wanting to go back and do anything to make it so that that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
That's your overwhelming
anything to turn
initial,
over the
yeah,
clock
you would do anything to change it. And that's what their reaction is here. And, you know, sometimes we get mad at God, but the whole point of this story is that God is the author of life, not of death. And so, and you see Jesus' reaction where he hurt when he saw them weeping and it, you know.
Yes, and that's a tremendous comfort.
Yeah.
And we've got to go and explore that section.
Yeah.
We definitely have to. So how can less than perfect relationships or happenings, like Lazarus, we spoke about being to the glory of God, just really practically. I mean, you know, when bad things happen, we okay, God, how is this going to be glorious? It hurts.
Mm.
It's interesting that the entire story, it starts with this passage that Dr. Colon just referred to. The sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, we'll see that the implication of this story, it's not only for Lazarus' time,
mm-hmm.
it's for us today as well. Because the same story, Jesus is delaying, it seems to us that he is delaying.
Mm-hmm.
And we are still mourning and we are still crying. Why, why didn't you come on time?
Yeah.
Why I had to lose my loved one?
Every then, time we face pain, we ask those questions.
Exactly.
How long? Where
exactly.
were you?
Where yeah. were you? Where, yeah, yeah, you could have done it earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But then after at the end of the story, it's the climax.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
They believe. And when they believe, they see him coming out of the grave.
Absolutely.
When I look back on my personal life journey,
yes.
it seems like the darkest and the deepest times were when I was the closest to the Lord and I hung on to him even tighter. And for me, I got a ringside seat to see how he worked it out. And it does glorify him.
Mm-hmm.
My praises were much more genuine after those experiences.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I wrote in my Bible, if God has brought you to it, he will bring you through it. And I've seen this over and over again. And I just have a greater story to tell. And
at the
others,
end.
And mm-hmm. to share with other people.
If God has brought you
to it,
he'll bring you through it. Well, we are really enjoying our exploration of Lazarus' story. It's so long ago, and yet it's so contemporary.
Yes.
And affects each of us
it is.
In a different way
yeah.
over here. Are you more like Martha or Mary when you face pain at home? And how does your pain style affect your relationship with God and with others close to you? After the break, our experts here are going to help us explore these questions. Now, don't forget our study guide that'll take you deeper into the story. Go to our website and click on the free offers tab. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We've been speaking about the hope that Lazarus' story gives to all of us who feel entombed in problems or in pain, even in our families. Now, Martha and Mary seem to show us two very different ways of facing pain. How does Martha face pain?
She seems to be, the one who's kind of the ringleader, keeping everything together,
mm-hmm.
you know, juggling everything in the air. And, you know, I'm the oldest of the three, and sometes that's the role.
So you see a bit
into,
of Martha.
You know, you'd like to be like Mary and, mm-hmm. you know, be able to do that. But, you know, your situations force you into having to handle it that way. Yeah.
So it's been in keeping the parts together, even
mm-hmm.
in a tragedy.
Yeah.
You got to keep it together. Okay, good. And she also seems to be, at least Jesus has the most profound theological discussion with her over here.
Mm-hmm.
So she seems to kind of try to handle this whole thing more
cognitively.
She leaves Martha with the comforters.
Mary.
She leaves Mary with the comforters, and she goes to deal with the issue before she brings Mary in, because she knows that she has to get a grasp of where Jesus is before she introduces Mary into the picture.
So you have a little bit of she's protecting her little sister even over here. Now, which style do you think's better? Is there a better style?
A combination of styles. Yeah.
It's
always better.
The left and the right brain, style.
We forgot to mention Mary's style. What was Mary's style?
It's just feelings.
She just falls at Jesus' feet and weeps.
Weeps.
And she asks the one question. So it's the opposite. It's the heart style. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you were saying a combination would be the best.
Yeah. It probably would be but the climax of the story is they believed. Mm-hmm. Both of them, mm-hmm. even though they showed disbelief at the beginning, mm-hmm. but ultimately they, Martha, for instance, in verse 27, she says, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ." In other words, the Messiah, the Son of God, who is to come into the world. And I know that you will resurrect my son, my brother. Mm-hmm. My brother. The same can be said mm-hmm. about Mary, even though she cried, she wept, she fell on her knees. But at the same time, later on, we will see that there was this believe.
Mm-hmm. So this believe, I mean, it's such a big word and so loaded, but in this story, believe seems to be trusting mm-hmm. that Jesus still loves me, mm-hmm. even though it doesn't look like it right now.
Mm-hmm. Because they knew the person. They were looking above the circumstances to the person.
Over the circumstances to the person.
Who was with them. The issue is not the circumstance, but it's who is with you mm-hmm. in Absolutely. The circumstance.
We've got to mention the shortest verse in the Bible. And that is John 11:35. Right. Does someone want to quote this long verse for us?
From memory. We can do it from memory.
Depends on which version you're using. That's right. Jesus wept. Now, what does Jesus weeping, or how does Jesus weeping and crying help us? How can it help us face pain, hardship, disappointment, even in the family?
He understands.
I just find tremendous comfort mm-hmm. in knowing that when I'm hurting, because and before it says that he groaned with them when he mm-hmm. saw them weeping.
This wasn't just a little sniffle.
No, I mean, he's just at his core is shaken by this, and to know that when you're hurting, he's hurting even more, mm-hmm. you know, because his love is even greater than your love. So that I find a lot of comfort in that.
Absolutely.
And I don't think he was weeping only for what was happening right then and there. I think because he has prophetic powers, I think he was weeping for what was going to happen in the future. You know, he knows the suffering, you know.
So that includes me.
To come. Which is what I'm trying to say. Yeah. That brings it right down to my time, or your time.
And not only our suffering, I think he's confronted with the reality that his disciples are hesitant to come to Jerusalem with them mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. Jesus' life is in Absolutely. Danger. Jesus realizes and has already begun to talk to his disciples about having to die himself mm-hmm. and be mm-hmm. separated from the presence of his Father. And so he is just taking all of this in, and he's feeling their pain, realizing that this is also going to be the pain of his mother. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Realizing that this is going to be the pain of his disciples, mm-hmm. realizing that this is going to be the pain of all of us mm-hmm. who face death. And unless we have him, it's hopeless.
Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. with Jesus, there's nothing hopeless.
Exactly.
And we've been talking about death, but there are a lot of things that happen that feel at least as painful as death in our families mm-hmm. today. And perhaps this is the extreme example for us. If Jesus can raise the dead, there's no stopping him.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever we face, there's no stopping Jesus over here.
So what am I worrying about?
What am I worrying about?
About things that are less than death even. You know?
Absolutely.
Really, we can trust him.
And Jesus feels my pain.
Yes.
Jesus feels my pain as I go through different situations in life.
Yes.
That's right.
He does.
Well, very briefly, I'll pick on you, Sergio.
Okay.
What are you taking with from this story?
To me, looking at this, The main theme seems to be, as Dr. Colon was saying, glorifying God. And how amazing is it to be Lazarus, to be a walking example of God's glory for the rest of your life?
Absolutely.
And I think all of us can be used in that way, that we all can be used to his glory. To quote John, I think chapter 14, verse 13, mm-hmm. he says, "And whatever you ask in my name, that I will do, that the Father may be glorified in the Son." And that's what this is, that's what this story is about to me.
This is all what it's about.
Yeah.
Being glorified.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, Oleg, in a nutshell.
Yes. Jesus came, even though there was the threat of him being killed, he came because Lazarus was his friend. I want to be Jesus' friend.
Mm.
Lazarus was his friend. I want to be Jesus' friend.
Yes.
Well, our time is running out and has run out, and it's been wonderful having you with me. A very big thank you to May Ellen, to Gaspar, to Oleg, to Sergio. It's been wonderful speaking with you. We've got to get this combination together again soon. Now, if you came halfway through the program and you missed out on seeing that Egyptian scarab or our hands-on section, don't worry, all is not lost. You can go to hopetv.org/storyline and you can watch this entire episode or any other episode at your leisure. If you want to share a story of how Lazarus's resurrection gives you hope or healing in your family, please go to our website or post on Facebook and Twitter. And remember that Storyline is available in the iTunes store as a podcast. You can also download the entire episode and watch it on the go. So now don't go anywhere. There's still more after the break. Just before Easter, I spent a few hours in a cemetery recording the resurrection story of Jesus. Walking among the tombstones and reading them brought home an awful truth. In loving memory of our dear mother, or in memory of our beautiful baby, all of these people were a part of a family circle, and all of them had friends who loved them. All of them left family and friends hurting. But death isn't the only thing that leaves gaping holes in our families. Today, there's divorce, abandonment, neglect, estrangement. They're families that die slowly, but just as painfully through these things. I'm so glad that Jesus didn't make it back in time to heal Lazarus. Jesus doesn't want to just patch up our broken relationships. He wants to make something totally new out of them. When all hope is lost, Jesus promises a resurrection. When the going's slow and the pain raw, I can remember Jesus crying and I can cling to him and wait for that resurrection. Like Mary and Martha, I can hold on to Jesus even when I don't understand everything and know that he loves me. Until next time, I'd like to invite you to be comforted by God's nearness as you put the plot of your storyline into God's capable, comforting hands.